Okay.
You can go ahead and, like, when and where did you teach? Didn't you just mostly teach around here, or?
Okay. I started at J.H. Castle. I taught, I think it was a third grade. And my husband was teaching junior high in Boonville, and I was teaching at J.H. Castle. And, of course, it was in elementary. And after I taught there for 1 year, then I moved into Boonville because we only had one car, and we were trying to go back and forth. And so they moved me into Boonville, and I taught at the old Clark School. And I started out, I think, in third grade. And then after teaching third grade for 1 year, I went into fourth. And I taught fourth grade for quite a few years. And then this was over at Logue. Ella Williams and Clark combined, and they built a new school that was Logue. And I was in fourth grade at that time. After I taught fourth grade for a lot of years, then they needed a sixth grade teacher because they had male teachers, and they wanted a female in one of the sixth grades, so I switched to sixth grade, and I found that that really was more my area than a lower grade because I seemed to relate better to older kids than I did to younger ones. So I taught sixth grade for the last 4 years before I retired, and I did the track team for the last three years, and we won the county track meet for the last 3 years that I had a track team, which, of course, thrilled me no end.
Yeah.
I really can't take any credit for that, but I had such a tremendous talent there. And so when I took over the track team, they had lost previously. And then for the next 3 years, we won the county track meets, and I was just thrilled. But the kids were just terrific. It really wasn't anything I did. It was the talent that they had.
Right.
And the fact that I could relate to them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you said that you relate better with the older kids
Yes.
than the younger ones?
Yes, I think I do. After I retired, I suffered through retirement for about 3 months. And I missed the kids, and I missed the camaraderie that you have with that age group so much that after 3 months, I thought, if I don't go back and work with kids, I'm just going to wither up and die. And so I started subbing, and this is the third year that I've subbed, and I've subbed in all grade levels from kindergarten clear through high school. Alternative school, I did CSRS, I've taught everything, and I have loved it. I still like the older kids. I seem to relate better with the older kids. I think I speak their language a little bit better.
Okay. What was your first day of teaching like?
Well, it was an almost absolute, you'd almost say nightmare, but it wasn't really a nightmare. It was just that at this particular time when I started teaching, elementary teachers were so much in demand, and particularly in the Newburgh area, because they had so many students, and the school was not equipped to handle the number of students they have today. Of course, they've remodeled the schools and made more classrooms and more teachers.
Mm-hmm.
But the first year I taught, I had as many as 42 students in a classroom. And this was in, I think, the second or third grade. I have to go back about 28 years. The second or third grade. With so many students in the classroom, you couldn't even walk between the desks. I had, I would say, about 5 reading groups going. You would just rotate from one group to the other try to keep them going.
Uh-huh.
Go from one subject to the next and still teach 5 groups of kids. But 42 kids in the classroom, and that was probably my highest number. It would rotate anywhere between 38 and 42, but the classes were so large and the school was just bursting at the seams. And I tried to, the first year you teach, you think, oh, I've got to teach them everything. They don't know anything. I've got to teach them everything. So I worked so hard at it that I would be totally exhausted when I came in, not realizing that, all right, next year they got another teacher. They're going to pick up. I felt like I had to teach them the world. And so I was in a state of exhaustion almost all the time, trying to just run a class of 42 kids and try to do everything else that I needed to prepare lesson plans, try to individualize what I could. But as the years passed, it got better and better and better, more space, more teachers, less students, and it really got much better.
Yeah. Did it seem really difficult, like, on you or the students whenever you're teaching that many?
I think it was difficult because I had to teach one group, immediately give the group I finished with something to do, mm-hmm. go back to another group, finish with them, give them something to do, and take on another group and give them something to do. So it was just almost like being on a merry-go-round.
Right.
You never knew when you stopped and when you started, and at the end of the day, you weren't sure what you finished and what you had completed. Right. You weren't sure if you were successful in teaching it because there was so much there that you had to do.
Yeah.
It was just almost overwhelming. But this was a period of time, you have to realize, 28 years ago, which is a lot different from what it is now.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. What methods in the classroom management worked best for you?
Well, I always went into it with one premise in mind. You can't motivate a child, but you've got to find out what motivates the child. So you start with that, and not every method works with every child. So you look at the child and you think, well, this is not working, so something else might work. So you kind of shift from one area to another area, and you try to think of what the child is thinking, and every child is an individual. You rarely have a group of homogeneous kids. You just don't. Every child comes from a different background, a different family, likes, dislikes, but you have to find out what works best with each child and then try to do as much as you can to individualize, and you can't always do that because with a lot of children in the class, you can't single out one specific group and simply focus on them because you've got to focus on all of it. So it makes it a little bit hard. Probably one of the things that I feel like I did best was I always tried to think the way they thought. I remember one time I had a student who told me, and I didn't start teaching till I was up in age a little bit, and my son and my daughter were up in junior high and high school, and I didn't start until then. So I was older than a lot of young teachers that are going out. And I remember in fourth grade, I had taught for a few years, I had one student who said to me, and I wasn't really quite sure when he said it, he said, "Mrs. Hale, you're the youngest old teacher I ever had." And I remember stopping and thinking, now, is that a compliment or is that something else? And I got to thinking about it, and I thought, all right, I may be older than some of the other teachers in the building, but then maybe my state of mind has kept pace with the kids. So I tried. All the years that I taught, I tried to keep up with what young students liked, what they did, how they dressed, the music they listened to. I would wear really fancy earrings to school because the kids loved them. They say, "Oh, those are beautiful earrings. Where did you get them?" And they love to see you dress not like an old school teacher,
right,
but mod. And I tried to do that. I teased them. I laughed with them. I didn't talk to them. I talked with them. One of the things I could probably tell a younger teacher today is never take a child out in the hall to reprimand them and harangue them for 15 minutes. Say what you've got to say in as few words as possible. Let them know that you're not pleased with what they did, but you understand and listen to them. And then when it's all said and done, give them a hug and send them back in the classroom. Don't sit a child in the hall to sit there and work on papers or whatever. Don't talk down to them. Don't ridicule them or say anything derogatory in front of the class about the child. Treat the child as you would like to be treated yourself. I think probably in 28 years of teaching, I think probably the most satisfaction I have today is I can go to the junior high and the high school And the kids that I've taught previously rush up to me and they give me a great big hug and say, I am so glad to see you. When are you going to sub in my class? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the greatest compliment I ever could get.
Right.
And I have such an affinity for these kids, and I love them, and I think it keeps me young. Most people won't understand Jimmy Durante, but there was an old saying he used to say, he had a song that he used to sing, and it said, fairy tales will come true, they will happen to you if you're young at heart, and if you should survive to 105, think of all you'll derive out of being alive if you are among the very young at heart. And I think the last few years that I've taught, and I was so tired and so worn out, I would come home and I would think about that and I would say, okay, I'm still young at heart. I can handle this. And even after I retired, I found out I have to get back into this. I can't stay away from kids. I like them too much. It's good for me.
Mm-hmm.
I think the kids enjoy me, even from kindergarten to high school. They will ask me, when are you coming back? When are you coming back in my room? Of course, I always feed them candy. I love that. I laugh with them. I joke with them. I tease them. But I do teach them.
Right.
And I think all the kids that I've had, they always come back to me and say, I love being in your class, and I learned so much. And that's what makes it worthwhile.
Yeah. It's important to have fun with them and, you know, while they're learning.
And even if you're in college right now and you will be out and you will be teaching a class, but society and kids are changing so much, you would have no idea in a few years when you start, you will almost be shocked at what they know and what they say. And you have to realize the world is not the same as it was 10 years ago, even 5 years ago. It has changed so much, and you have to change with it.
Right.
And you have to accept the students the way they are and try to relate to them on their level.
How much has it changed? Have you, like, since when you first taught, like, how much has it changed over the years that you taught?
Well, when I started 28 years ago, it was almost as if the teacher was law. I mean, anything they said and did was it. And the students, the parents would more or less say, all right, that's the teacher, and if you did something wrong and you were punished, then all right, you did something wrong. As the years have passed, and the last few years that I've taught, you're expected to be all things to all students, and you can't be. You're a mother. Maybe you take the place of siblings. Maybe you take the place of aunts and uncles. But society, unfortunately, I have found in the last few years, every time they have a problem with the younger generation, it seems as if they want to put it on the doorstep of the teachers. Everything went wrong because they didn't learn this in school. They weren't taught this in school. But a teacher can't be all things. You can only be as much as you can be. And you can't blame yourself. If you have a child that is successful, that is great. That is wonderful. But you are going to teach just as many kids who are not successful, who go down the drain. And even though you tried to do what you could do, but it seems as if you pick up a newspaper, anytime you read the newspaper, so much of the blame is placed on the teachers in the public school system. And that is not fair to the teachers who are dedicated and try to do the best they can, but they can't be all things.
Right.
You can't change the morals. You can't change their home life. You have a child that comes to school someday, and all of a sudden you look in the back, and he's got his head on the desk, and he's sound asleep. And one of the kids will say, Johnny's asleep. He's got his head on the desk. And you have to say, well, maybe he didn't get enough sleep last night. Maybe he's tired. And you let it go. You don't know what kept him awake all night. You don't know what went on in the house. But you try to understand that if a child falls asleep in class, there's some reason for it. And you try not to single the child out. And you might talk to him privately later and say, did you have something wrong last night? Was there a problem? But you don't bring it out in front of the class. I've told many a class, okay, he's tired. Let him take his nap. He'll wake up in a little bit. And then talk to him later.
Right.
But never in front of the class.
Okay. So whenever you said about there's different kids that learn that, or they're faster learners than others. What, like, how would you deal with it, like, if there's different kinds of learners in the classroom?
Well, one of the things you can do is, I would teach something, and I still am an old-fashioned teacher in that I think a computer and a calculator cannot take the place of a teacher working one-to-one with a child. So you work one-to-one with them as much as you possibly can. Then you have students who pick up things a lot faster. And all of a sudden you find yourself spread so thin that you can't reach everybody. So one of the things that I would do is I would make sure if I had a few students in the class who would learn quickly and seem to understand. If I couldn't, I would teach a child and all of a sudden I would say, I'm not getting to this person. What am I doing wrong? So then I would take another child and say, all right, you sit with him for a while and you talk with him and talk him through a problem or through a lesson or whatever and just keep talking and let him start figuring out things and you try to help him. Sometimes one child can teach another child just as well and just as fast as the teacher can because sometimes a child can get on the same level, whereas the teacher might have been just a little bit off and just couldn't reach him. And I have always utilized the really bright kids in the class to help with some of those that were not quite as able to do. And it worked out quite well. I would sometimes separate a group from the rest of the class and say, okay, we're going to work on the board. I'm going to work with each one of you. And the rest of the class would go ahead and work. And I would take that one group and I would put them at the board and we would start working. And I would make them think out loud. I want to know what you're thinking. And I want you to tell me everything that you're doing. I want to see what's going on in your mind. And once you do that, you can see which way the wheels are turning. And I think that helps.
Okay. Is there any, like, students that you remember? Like, is there any particular ones that...
Well, I would have to say I remember almost all of the students that I've taught. Sometimes I can't dredge up a name, but I almost always recognize a face. And rather than not being able to call them by name because the years pass and you've had so many names going through your mind, I always have one expression that I use. And when they rush up to me and they say, Mrs. Hill, how are you? And I think, oh my gosh, what is this child's name? So I fake it. I put my arms around them and give them a big hug and I say, dear one, how are you? You are looking so great and you look so good and you have grown up. And that works, because you can't put a name with every face in 28 years. But there's always something special about every child. And every time I'm subbing and some of the kids will rush up to me, I always give them a hug. And most of the kids that I have taught more or less expect a hug. And that really pleases me.
When did you feel successful with your career?
I'm not sure that I ever felt completely successful. I felt like I did as much as I was able to do. I always laughed and I said, when I got ready to retire, I said, why am I retiring? I just now figured out how to do this job. But I felt like I should give younger people a chance, that I needed to have time to visit my family and to spend a little time with my family, because they all live in the South, and I don't have anyone up here except dog. And I felt like this would give me a chance to travel and to visit with my son and my daughter, who are both in Florida, and my sister, who's in Louisiana. And I regretted not having as much time with them. So I felt like this would give me more time. But as time passed and I would visit my family, I would be so ready to come back home because I wanted to get back in the classroom. Because I missed all the kids that I taught, and I missed being with them. And I don't know that I ever felt as if I was totally and completely successful, but when a student comes back to you and says, I'm doing so well, I am doing so well, and the parent of the child will talk to you and say, my child learned so much in your classroom, and they were so happy in that classroom, and I appreciate what you did, that's when you begin to feel successful.
Okay. Is there any of the best, or describe some of the best aspects of teaching, of the teaching profession?
I think it's what you feel inside. You're going to have your disappointments. You're going to have your failures. you're going to have your successes. And you can't dwell on the failures because you can't change a child completely. You might be able to help them up to a point, but once that child is away from you and into other things, you have no control over what happens. And in some instances, I've had students that did not turn out well. They've had a lot of problems socially. And I've had students that have gone on to college and have been a success. So you can't really dwell on the things that went wrong because you can't do it all.
Right.
And when you start teaching, you've got to go in the classroom realizing I'm going to do the best I can with what I've got. But I can't blame myself for everything that doesn't work out. Because if you do, you won't have a good night's sleep for the rest of your life. And I've agonized many times over a child that I knew, that I taught, that ended up in a boys' school or trouble with the law. And that has happened many times. But then I have to think about the ones that went on that had no problems. And they graduated and they went on to school. And they'll almost always come back to you and give you a hug. When you see them any place, they give you a hug. And you're always so glad to see them. You think, well, okay, I did something for at least one or two of them. And that's great.
Okay. What factors most limited your success in teaching?
Well, I think one of the factors probably would be family life. You don't know what goes on in a family. You can't change a child's family life. You only have them part of the day, and you can only work with the child while you have them. But they're going to leave the environment of school and what you're trying to teach them and go back into an environment that maybe is not quite what it should be. But there's nothing you can do about that. So you are limited in that respect. You can only do what you're capable of doing. And you send the child home every day, and you don't know what family life is like. And you get them the next day, you get them the next day, and they still go back to the same type of situation. So sometimes that can be very discouraging, because you know what you do in the school during the day might be lost as soon as they leave the building and go home. It might just be totally gone.
Okay. Do you have any regrets of spending your time as a teacher?
Oh, no. No. I don't have any regrets as a teacher at all. I've often thought, I worked in a hospital. While I was going to college, I was working in a hospital 3 days a week as a ward secretary, and I learned a lot about medicine. I was raising two teenagers, and I think they really raised themselves. But when I finally got into teaching, I went to school, and I did, as many students do nowadays, they hold down an extra job in order to get through. I did the same thing. I had no regrets. I don't know, I can't think of anything that you get more satisfaction out of. You get a lot of disappointments. But I think the satisfaction you get overshadows any disappointment that you might have. I can't picture myself being anything but a teacher. I don't know what else I could be.
Sorry. Okay, of all the techniques you used, what held the students' interest the most?
I think I used to kid them and say, okay, people, it's my time. I'm on stage. I am the star. Look at me. Listen to me. I am going to teach you something. I'm going to tell you something. But I am the star right now, so you watch me. Don't talk to anybody else. I am on stage. And I would hold their interest. If it meant getting exciting and rushing around the room or acting like a clown or teasing somebody or doing anything that was necessary, you've got to get their attention.
Right.
And you can't teach them unless you get their attention. I did whatever it took to get their attention. If it meant acting like a clown, all right, I'm a clown. But I'm on stage. While I'm on stage, you watch me, and you might learn something. And I think because I was not a person who sat at the desk, I never sat at the desk. I was up and around the room. I was always moving, doing something. And if one of the students decided to get up and sit down at my desk and do some work, that was fine. I didn't mind. That desk wasn't sacred. everything that was on the desk was papers and things that belonged to the class. So I was not one of these teachers who said, don't touch my desk. Don't open the drawers. No, they had free access to my desk. I would lose something, I'd say, oh, I can't find something. And every kid in the class would jump up and start looking for it. And they'd find it a lot faster than I could. But if I were teaching and some child decided to move to my seat and sit there for a while and work on the papers, that was all right. It didn't upset me. It didn't bother me because I was moving around the room. I found it very hard. I could not teach from the desk. I could not teach from a chair. I had to be up and I had to be moving. And I used a blackboard from one end to the other. I was always writing something or drawing arrows or this goes with this and this goes with that and look at it. See what I'm doing. And you do whatever it takes to hold their attention. And if it means you're on stage, you're on stage.
Okay. Why do you think college education has become more important than in the past?
Well, I don't think anyone can have too much education. I actually thought, my husband was a math teacher at the junior high, and a lot of people in Boonville remember him. He was a very good math teacher, and he died in his 40s. And my son and my daughter both were grown and gone. So I was literally all alone. And I really and truly thought about going back to school, mainly because I don't think there is a limit to what a person can learn. And I think the more you learn, even if it's not something you're going to pursue later on, I think education is the most important thing in the world. And I actually am, in a way, sorry that I had the time, but I was consumed with teaching, and I thought, now, if I start night classes or something like that, I'm going to be too tired to teach the class the next day. But I've always been a little bit sorry because there's so many things out there that I would like to learn that I haven't learned. So I think education is the most important thing in the world, whether you use all of it or just use part of what you learn. It's there, and it's in your mind, and nothing can take the place of knowledge. Absolutely nothing.
Okay. Excuse me. Have you encountered racism in your school?
I really don't think so, because in a small town like we have here, you don't have a lot of different ethnic groups, I would say. There was only a minority of black students, and the students I have only taught probably in my lifetime, maybe 5 or 6 at the most. And they fit quite well in the classroom. They got along well. They were great kids. There was no problem with them. Even today, some of the kids that I taught, color makes no difference to me. And I have taught some students that have gone, that have been quite successful. And I will see them sometimes, and they always come up. I say, give me a big hug. And they always rush over and give me a hug. I don't think racism ever entered into any of my classrooms, at least not that I can remember. I don't think it ever happened.
Okay. What have you learned about the task of grading students that you can share now that you didn't know when you became a teacher?
Grading?
Yeah.
Grading them?
Yeah.
Well, you almost have to grade a child in a way on what they're capable of doing. There are standards. Obviously, you can't give a child an A who is a student who can barely make a C. But as far as grading them, I always tried to be very honest in my grading. And no matter if it was a C student, I would try to find something good about something they did, wrote on a paper. And I would write, good thought, or you worded this well. I would try to write something like that, even though maybe at test time they might not show up as well. But I always try to be positive in trying to find something on that child's paper that I could say was good. There's so many abilities in a classroom. You will not have a classroom of A students, just complete A students. You just won't. But always try to find something good about maybe the child who makes a low grade. Find something on the paper that you can say, good job. Something that helps them a little bit in their self-esteem. I think self-esteem is very important.
Okay. Well, I don't think there's any more. So you taught for 28 years,
right?
And you stayed in this area in New Bern and Boonville?
Well, I stayed, I only taught first year in New Bern, and then I moved into the Boonville area because my husband was teaching in Boonville. And it was not convenient for us because we only had the one car.
Right.
And like most students who get out of college, you've got all these debts and everything. And when I started teaching, you were required to have a master's within 5 years. So paying off a college education and then turning right around and starting a master's kind of puts a strain on the budget a little bit. But I love teaching in Boonville, and I think that is mainly because I have managed to teach so many of the kids. And even in the last, I'm going to say the last 2 years, I have subbed in so many different schools that the kids have, they started recognizing me, and they know who I am, even though maybe I didn't teach them while they were going through elementary. But as I go back to the schools, they begin to recognize me and know who I am. And they'll say, when are you coming back? When are you going to sub in my classroom? And I don't know. I don't know that I could ever do anything other than teaching that would give me as much satisfaction. And as far as trying to give a young teacher any advice, I couldn't get philosophical about it, because it's something that you have inside you, and it's either there or it isn't. There are some people who go into teaching and end up hating it. There are other people who go into teaching and couldn't think of doing anything else. And really, I don't think I would have been successful at anything else. Working with young people, even after being retired for 2 years, when somebody calls and says, can you sub in my class? I say, sure. And I'm right there. And I always tell them, oh, if you don't have complete lesson plans, that's fine. I can go through the books. I can do something with them while I'm there. And then at the end of the day, I think it's important at the end of the day to take the last 15 minutes, do something that is totally, totally fun for the kids. They've been there all day. They've studied all day. You have pushed and pushed and pushed, and they're tired and you're tired. Find some game. Find something that they like to play, something they want to do, and give them the last 15 minutes to just explode. We used to blow up a big balloon in the last 15 minutes and bat that balloon all over the classroom. I just turn them loose. And I'd say, anybody that the balloon touches the floor, you're a rotten egg, and you have to sit down. And it would get wild, and it would get crazy, but they would love it. We used to play a game called Apple, Peaches, Pears, and Plums. Even now, the kids will say, are we going to have time for Apple, Peaches, Pears, and Plums? I give every student a name. And then when you call out the names, like Apple, Peaches, and Pears, every kid has to jump up and switch seats with the other person who has that name. One person is it. Doesn't have a seat. He's got to, or she has got to rush and grab the seat. And with the older kids, it gets really wild, because they will jump over chairs. They will just do almost anything to grab that seat. The younger kids, they love it. And they're not quite as rambunctious, but almost all the classrooms, do we have time to play that game? And I'll say, if we get through with all of our work and we've got 10 or 15 minutes, we'll play a game. And then, too, they like ghost stories. They love a good ghost story. So find some good ghost story books. Even the young ones like those types of books. But take the last few minutes of every day just to let your hair down and let the kids be kids and join in with the fun, because it's so great.
This really has nothing to do with this, but I know there's a lot of kids that they know you. Like, I teach at the gymnastics place.
Yeah.
And they're always like, because I told them that I had to come and interview, and they're like, oh, this is how I know her. She's so much fun. You'll like her. And I'm like, yeah, I know her.
Well, I've taught a few of your brothers and sisters.
Right.
Yes. And I don't know. I just love it when a kid will come up to me and give me a hug and say, I love being in your class. And even the parents will do that.
Right.
And if a parent stops you when you're in Walmart or someplace and says, oh, my child just loved being in your class, it makes all the disappointments go away. It makes everything, and you start feeling so good, and you think, gee, I meant something to somebody. And that's probably the greatest feeling in the world. just to feel like you mean something to somebody.
All right. Well, thanks. I guess we've touched up on everything.
You have to type this up?
No.
Feel free to edit anything I've got on there.